Well, let's welcome you back to This Week in the Association. I'm Rob Pannier, joined once again by my good buddy Kevin Lucco. And this week, Kevin and I are honored to welcome Kane County Cougars outfielder Jonah Davis. Jonah, thanks for joining us this week.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me. I appreciate you guys having me on.
Well, Jonah, let's start with this. Today here at the show, we named you as the player of the week after a nice 3-homer, 10 RBI week for the team. A fantastic performance by you. Tell us a little bit about your thoughts on how you feel you're playing right now and this week that you just had for yourself.
I think overall, you know, as a team, we've been playing great baseball, and I've been personally feeling pretty good and locked in at the plate and just not trying to do too much up there. You know, I think we're just about 30 games in, or a little bit over 30 games into the season, you know, so really starting to feel comfortable in there and consistent with timing and you know, knowing what I want to do up there at the plate and walking in there with the plan and, you know, just executing as much as I possibly can. You can't get the job done every time, you know, but feeling great in there and just hoping to keep that stretch rolling.
Now, I'm curious from you, you come out of affiliate ball where you clearly are going to have more scouting reports, maybe be more familiar with opposing pitchers and things. What is it like to come to the American Association where you may not have as much information when you go up to the plate?
Yeah, no, completely. It's completely different, honestly, you know, and came from the Cardinals last season, and I was with the Pirates for 4 seasons before that, and, you know, we get pretty in-depth scouting reports as you kind of climb the ladder of the minor leagues, and here it's honestly just, you know, going back to like travel baseball. You know, you don't really have a scouting report on the pitcher before the game. You got to ask your teammates, see if they've maybe seen him before or played with them before. So really it's just once the game starts, paying attention and watching and looking at what he does to your teammates who are similar hitters, or, you know, for me, I watch everybody from the left side to kind of see how the pitcher is going to approach that hitter. But it kind of takes a little bit of the complexity of hitting out of it. In my opinion, you know, you're not getting too caught up in the numbers of, oh, he's got a 2100, you know, 20 inches of ride, anything like that. It just kind of simplifies the game, and hey, he's got a fastball at this velocity, here's his off speed, and you know, see the ball hit the ball. So I kind of like it in that sense, you know, it's just simplifying the game and slowing everything down a little bit. You know, would it be nice to have more in-depth scouting report? For sure. But hasn't proved too much of a challenge here for us yet. You know, we've been communicating in the dugout and just, you know, making sure we're talking to each other in between at-bats and giving each other, you know, what we see at the plate.
Do you feel like that gives you an advantage as a hitter where you're watching the pitcher pitch to several batters before you come up, whereas that pitcher only gets to face you and find out about you when you get to the plate?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think it goes both ways because, you know, obviously if the pitchers had a scouting report on us, they would be breaking down how they're going to throw to us and, you know, maybe where they're going to try and locate in the zone. I think it's a challenge for both sides, though, you know, just it's hard. You know, we don't have as much film on the pitchers here as you normally do in a Philly ball, so, you know, normally when you're getting up there, if you haven't seen that pitcher yet, you haven't played that team, you don't really have an idea of, okay, well, what's his curveball look like? What's his changeup look like? Is he cutting the fastball, or is he having a two-seam on the fastball? You know, so kind of like I said before, it's just really important that whoever's hitting before me, you know, I talk with them and ask them, hey, you know, what's it looking like? Is it sinking? Is it cutting? But I think it's a challenge for both sides, and, you know, just not trying to overcomplicate it as a pitcher and a hitter. Just, you know, sticking with what your strengths are as that player and knowing where, you know, for me personally, what zone I'm looking at and where I can drive the ball and do damage.
Now, T.J. Bennett has been in the league for quite a while. Does he have book on pitchers? I know once in a while you run into that guy that just seems to take notes and has a book on every pitcher that comes along. Is there anybody on your team that has that?
Yeah, no, totally. I've definitely played with a lot of players like that in the past who keep a little book. We have one guy on our team who does that. I'm not going to say his name because I don't know if he wants me to say that publicly or not. But TJ, though, he has, you know, he's a wealth of knowledge just in terms of not only for the pitchers in this league, but just as a baseball player in general. You know, like you said, he's been around this league for a few years, and before coming here, he played affiliate ball as well. So, you know, he's just a great source to talk to in the dugout, and he bats before me too. You know, and he's a lefty as well. You know, power guy. So I like talking to him and seeing kind of how the pitcher approaches him and his at bats but yeah, you know, I've seen that quite a lot. People taking notes on pitchers. For me personally, I it's a little too in depth for me. I'd be thinking too much if I had too many notes going on. But I definitely appreciate the guys who do take some notes. So, you know, he can tell me, hey, he's got this for his fastball, and then this is what he'd like to go to for his off speed pitch.
I'm curious, you started out in the season kind of looking like you were trying to work into a rhythm for yourself, but over the last couple of weeks, you really look like you're just driving the ball well. Do you feel like part of that is you've got to see Lake Country a couple of times now? It was your second time through Chicago, your second time through Winnipeg. Do you feel like that's kind of helping you this year?
I don't know if it has to do with seeing them again. I think for me, it's just the consistency of getting at bats and, you know, playing every day. Honestly, any baseball player knows it's really hard to find that rhythm, like you said, and find that timing when you're not getting the opportunity to play every day. And luckily here, you know, I've been playing, you know, five games a week, six games a week. And I think that's just really helped me, one, you know, get that timing and get that consistency at the plate, but also just the confidence. You know, I think entering the season, I was lacking a little bit of the confidence I have right now. You know, I got released at the end of spring training and, you know, was searching for answers, you know, at the plate and, you know, working my hardest to be the hitter that I know I can be. And, you know, after just, you know, it takes one pitch, you know, squaring up one pitch, and all of a sudden you start feeling it again and you know what you need to do to succeed at the plate. So, you know, I mean, maybe it is kind of seeing a couple of these pitchers here again over the past few weeks. But for me, I personally feel it's just getting that consistency and rhythm that, you know, playing every day can give you, and that timing, which is just essential, you know, for every player, every hitter in baseball.
Now, when you come out of spring training, then what made you decide and feel that King County was really the right spot for you?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I didn't know really anything about independent ball until I got released earlier this spring at the end of spring training. I wasn't certain if I was going to play or not. I wanted it to be, you know, the right fit and the right team. And luckily, you know, I think I found King County, and you know, I spoke with George over the phone, and I really liked what he had to say, and he liked what I had to say as well, and you know, what I had to offer and what my goals were as a player. And, you know, I decided to keep playing because I know I still have a lot to give for this game. And, you know, I wanted to keep going. And I truly believe in myself and, you know, along with everybody in the clubhouse that I'm playing with here at King County. You know, I think everybody's goal here, you know, is to hopefully sign back with an affiliate at some point. You know, we have a lot of affiliated players here, you know, former affiliated players here, and a couple, you know, younger guys that, you know, haven't played affiliated ball yet, but are hoping to get that as well. So we're a very driven team, you know, and I think, you know, we have both ends of the spectrum. We have some older, more veteran players and some younger guys who are looking to follow in their footsteps, you know, so it's great to have kind of both perspectives in the clubhouse. You know, somebody like Pete Cosma, who's been at the highest level, you know, played for the Cardinals and has two rings, you know, and hear how he thinks. So yeah, you know, it ended up being a perfect fit. You know, I really appreciate George for taking me on, and Matt Passarelli, great hitting coach over here, and we got a great thing going here in Kane County.
So does Pete Cosma ever have the World Series rings on him, or are they locked up safe somewhere?
No, I wish. I'm sure he has them locked up safe somewhere. I'll have to ask him, though, where he keeps them. Maybe he can send me a picture sometime or something.
Now, I have to tell you, Jonah, that my father passed away a few years ago, but he's a UC Berkeley graduate, long, long time ago. So, and I always kind of kid him about the sports were really bad when he went there, and then they kind of improved after he left. So we're at a school where baseball has really been successful for quite a while. Why was California kind of the choice for you?
Yeah, you know, I actually was committed to University of Nevada, Reno, my sophomore year of high school. And after the head coach there left, I actually decommitted my senior summer, and I wasn't sure where I was going. I was playing summer ball, and fortunately enough, my coach was in contact with the coaches over at Cal Berkeley, David Esker, and they came over and watched me play a few games, and they, you know, luckily they offered me. I went and visited, and I didn't like Berkeley the first time I went up there. I didn't want to go, but the second time I went up there again, and I really enjoyed it. And honestly, you know, I come from a pretty academic background. My father's a professor at UCSD and a composer, and you know, just the education there at Cal is, you know, second to none. And after speaking with Coach Esker there, you know, he's, you know, one of my favorite coaches that I've ever had. It was just a great environment, great place to be. You know, a wealth of knowledge, you know, obviously on the field and off the field as well, from all aspects of UC Berkeley. And, you know, it ended up being just the perfect fit. I was lucky to get the opportunity to go there.
That's interesting about your father. What kind of music does he compose?
He writes operas. He actually won the Pulitzer Prize a couple of years ago for one of his operas called Central Park Five, and he actually has one coming out, and that will be performed at the Met this summer in November. So we're excited about that. And so both my parents, my dad's a composer, my mom's a former opera singer and still does some singing on the side as well, but they're huge sports fans. I was born in New York, so they, you know, to say the least, they're very excited and have been excited my entire career that I decided to play sports, because they love to watch.
Any chance he could compose your walk-up music?
my dad or me?
Your dad.
Either way.
I think, you know, that would throw a real curb.
Yeah, I don't know if it would get me in the zone, but it's a little bit different than you know, some diamond baseball music, but I'm sure he could whip something up that might work.
Hey, it might terrify the pitcher. You know, they might be like, "Oh my God, what's going on here?" So it might be a good psychological.
I'd have to get him to make something like Hans Zimmer, you know, like a Batman theme or something. I don't know.
So starting in New York and going all the way to California, and now you're playing in Illinois. That's kind of an interesting travel journey there for you.
Oh yeah, I mean, you know, this game will take you everywhere. I grew up in San Diego, and you know, would spend a lot of summers back in New York to visit family. But you know, through baseball, I've been fortunate enough. You know, I've been around the majority of the country now. You know, I started my professional career in Bristol, Virginia, and then I was in North Carolina, Greensboro, and from there went to Altoona, Pennsylvania. You know, so it's always it's always nice being able to travel and kind of see what the rest of the country has to offer besides just hanging out at the beach of San Diego all the time.
So you have to share with me. I'm out in San Diego right now. My son-in-law is in the Navy out here. And tell me, give me your top one or two places I've got to go eat while I'm here.
Oh, man, you're putting me on the spot. All right. Well, you definitely got to get a burrito or some tacos. There's a place called Karina's. It's on India Street. Great surf and surf burrito. I would definitely get that. Absolutely. What's another restaurant down there? It's too hard to pick just two, but let's see. All right. These both aren't restaurants. They're pretty quick, but there's a sandwich shop that I used to go to all the time in high school called Urbane Cafe. Great sandwiches there. I mean, every time I go back to San Diego, I'm there at least, you know, two or three times a week. So you got to try Karina's and Urbane Cafe.
All right, I'm there. That sounds like a good combination for me. Fantastic. Well, your first year in independent baseball here, partner league baseball, I should say. What have kind of been your thoughts about playing in the American Association so far?
Yeah, no, I mean, I've had a great experience. You know, like I said before, I didn't know anything about, you know, partner league and independent league before coming here. And honestly, it really surprised my expectations. You know, the places we've been and the fields we've played at and the crowd as well. You know, here in Kane County, we get a great crowd here almost every night, you know, 3,000 to 5,000 fans a night. And the atmosphere is great. You know, it's very similar to where I played in the minor league throughout, you know, my career. And, you know, some of the competition is great as well, too. You know, we got a lot of talent on our team here in Kane County, and there's a lot of talent on a lot of the other teams we've played so far this season. So, yeah, I've definitely been enjoying myself here. I've really been appreciating the game again, just getting to go out there on the field and have fun with all these guys out here. And it's just overall, it's just a great environment to play in.
Now, Kevin and I have known George Shamus a really long time. Kevin actually about twice as long as I have. And I'm just kind of curious, how do you build your relationship with him? He can be kind of a really humorous guy after you've got to know him a little bit.
Yeah, no, totally. He's definitely a jokester. It's funny. I feel like I've had very similar coaches throughout my experience in baseball. You know, David Esker over at Cal, who now is the head coach at Stanford. He was my head coach for 2 years at Cal, and then after that, I had Mike New, and then my coach for the Pirates, Miguel Perez, and George are all. They're all very similar, you know. They can be pretty laid back. They like to crack jokes, you know. But you know, when they gotta crack the whip, they do. But they're great, you know. They're not only great coaches because of the knowledge that they have, but they clearly care about the players both on and off the field, you know. And that's something I really appreciate from those guys, you know, because you don't always run into a coach like that, you know. You have a lot of coaches who care about you on the field and your performance, but you don't always get the ones that care about the type of person you are and getting to know you off the field as well. And George is definitely one of those guys. And, you know, I've been fortunate to have several coaches like that throughout my career who I still keep in touch with. And, you know, if there's ever a point in time where I'm not playing for Kane County, I'm sure George will definitely be one of those guys.
To peel back the curtain a little bit, I'm the guy in Sioux City when you guys were there that George went out and tailgated with on Saturday night, had a few brats.
Oh, okay. Well, you were in the parking lot, right?
Yes.
Okay.
You know, traditionally, George has had teams that maybe started out a little bit slow and then starting in July really caught fire and had sensational stretches, especially August and beyond there. As you look at this Kane County team this year, do you feel like you guys are just right on the edge of putting something together, getting yourself a, a 12 out of 15 game streak or something like that where you're winning games?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, I think everybody, you know, who's watching the league could tell we were off to a pretty slow start. I mean, we had a rough stretch in the beginning. I think we had, I can't even remember anymore, but out of our first, like, 12 or 15 games, I think 9 of them went into extra innings, and we probably dropped 8 of those 9 by one run or something like that. You know, I think our bats were a little bit slow to heat up, you know, but there's some great hitters on this team, you know, like Jimmy Kerrigan, who's a home run leader last year. You know, he had a great series this past week, and, you know, he's looking great. It's looking like he's locked in and back to, you know, how everybody said he was hitting last season. You know, TJ's been on the whole year, really. You know, I think he's hitting around 300, and Cornelius Randolph's hitting great as well. You know, I think we've just, our pitching, you know, our pitching's been, you know, top in the league in a lot of categories. So just as hitters, I think we need to do a better job. And like you said, you know, this past week, 2 weeks, we've been doing a much better job of providing some run support for those guys. And yeah, we're definitely right on the cusp of having a good streak here. And, you know, that's all we need. And I, you know, I see us being a very great team for this league and definitely playoff contenders and, you know, hopefully meeting somebody else in the championship and competing there for that as well.
Jonah, I'm curious on the dugout. You're in the locker room as well. You saw Chicago get on a real hot run, then they really struggled. Milwaukee just had a nice run for themselves. Cleburne was excellent early on, has kind of fallen back a little bit. Lake Country caught fire for a little bit after changing the manager. Do you look at when teams are having big runs like that as a player and go, man, we could easily do that too?
Yeah, totally. You know, I mean, I think especially when you're playing those teams, you know, you see that, and, you know, at this level, you know, the talent level is all very close, you know, and it's just about getting all the right pieces to land at the same time. You know, we've had some games where our hitting, you know, we're getting a lot of hits, we're scoring runs, but, you know, maybe the pitching's giving up a little bit more than we're used to, and then, you know, we've had vice versa. So it's having everything connect and align at the right time. You know, I mean, we played Milwaukee a week or maybe a week and a half ago, and, you know, they're a good team as well. We took one from them, and, you know, they took a couple from us. But, you know, in one of those games that we dropped is a pretty close game, you know, and we see that we're right there competing with, you know, all those teams at the top of the bracket. So, yeah, we're all aware of that, and, you know, we know that we have the capability to perform at a higher level. It's just getting all those pieces to click at the same time. And obviously that's easier said than done, but we've been trending in that direction, I'd say, for the past week or so. You know, we've played some really good series. We won our last two series, you know, so we're just going day by day and game by game and improving what we can every day.
You know, I'm wondering, talking about your parents for a moment, clearly, at the level that they're at, a lot of intellect involved in that. I mean, people have great voices, but you get to become a star when you have a lot going on between your ears, kind of thing. Do you find that baseball was just such a natural fit for you as being an intellectual guy because it's a thinker's game?
Maybe. I don't know. I almost think, you know, you're correct and it is a thinker's game, but I do think the more that you get in your head in this game, the less success you're going to find. You know, you got to be able to keep it very simple. And I can't speak from a pitcher's perspective, but I know being a hitter, you got to walk up there. And obviously you're going up there with a plan and intent to do, at least for me, to do damage or whatever that intent might be for somebody else. But if you overcomplicate it and think too much, you can definitely, you know, kind of go into an overload up there. Maybe the analytical side from my parents has definitely helped me help me a little bit, but I do try to keep everything as simple as possible when I'm playing and not overcomplicate the game too much.
Is that easy to do, or that's taking some work still?
I mean, if it was easy, you know, I think all of us would already be in the big leagues. I think that's why the big leaguers are big leaguers, you know, and we're still working on our craft here. Just, you know, slowing the game down, and that's what everybody at the highest level says. You know, I have some buddies that, you know, that I played with in the Pirates and Cardinals who are now up there in the big leagues, and that's the biggest takeaway from anybody I've ever talked to who's played at, you know, the highest level, is just really learning how to slow the game down, because as you keep progressing in this game, you know, the pitchers get better, they're throwing harder, they're getting better off-speed pitches, and the game just moves quickly, so being able to control that is key, you know.
Do mom and dad have advice for you at times, kind of watching games and then sharing their thoughts on what they're seeing?
They try. I mean, do I listen to them all the time? No, but I mean, my mom tries. When I was younger, when I was about 9, maybe 8, she would shout the word watermelon from the stands and try to get me to picture the ball like a big, like, you know, beach ball or watermelon. That doesn't really work anymore per se, but, you know, they're always rooting me on, and, you know, regardless of, you know, whether or not I had a good game or a bad game, you know, they're supporting me, and you know, they'll offer their thoughts every once in a while, and I say thank you, but no, they're not the baseball players of the family.
Boy, you know, if that worked, I think every hockey goalie's parents would yell that from the stands.
Yeah, no doubt.
Well, if we hear watermelon yell from the stand sometime, we're going to be like, there's Jonah's mom right there. So now we know.
Yeah, yeah.
Awesome.
If they come out, I'm sure she will probably yell it.
So do they watch your games on American Association Baseball TV?
Yeah, they keep up when they can, and if they can, I normally try to send them videos of any hits or plays I got. Just, you know, same as when I was playing in affiliated ball, they would keep up on MILB, so they're doing the same right now, just to keep track of how I'm doing, and, you know, I think they're going to be coming out here at some point soon, but they just love watching sports. They're big sports fans, so they try to tune in whenever they can.
You know, I'm looking at the standings here. It's a big week coming up for your ball club, as you got Chicago at home for 3, and then you go to Milwaukee for 3. What's the thoughts going into the week?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, as a team for us, it's just not trying to do too much. You know, we've been much better at the plate, especially when we've had runners in scoring position with less than 2 outs. You know, I think that was something we were struggling with early on a lot. You know, we would get runners on either second or third with 1 out and or 0 outs, and we just weren't able to get them across home plate. But, you know, the past week to 2 weeks, we've been doing a much better job of just, you know, doing our job at the plate and getting the next hitter up. You know, and also a lot of that's easier, you know, when our whole lineup is swinging the bat and feeling comfortable at the plate as well. I think the beginning of the season, you know, a lot of us were struggling to find rhythm and timing at the plate. But now as a team, we don't feel that it's up to just one guy to try and get those runs in. We're confident in everybody's ability at the plate. So, you know, going out there and just taking it one game at a time. You know, we just saw Chicago last week and we're able to take 2 out of 3 games there. You know, just take it a game at a time and just, you know, let our pitchers keep working. They've been doing a great job up there. Play defense behind them and not trying to do too much at the plate and just generate some runs and you know, put some hits together. And, you know, we're looking forward to this week and hopefully winning both series and then being at the top of that at the scoreboard by the end of this week.
So you're telling me 5-1, 6-0, something around there?
Not going to guarantee anything, you know, but just we're,
I don't
want to
give the other teams any bulletin board material here, but
yeah, we're just, you know, we want to go out there and continue to win series. So whichever way we can do that, you know, that's what we're aiming for, and just keep playing team baseball.
Well, Jonah Davis, that's fantastic. Now you're a first time guest. So we have to share with you that we allow our guests to give us the final thought. So whatever you would like to talk about, the floor is yours.
So whatever I would like to talk about. Oh, man. All right, well, I guess since, you know, the NBA Finals just ended, I've been getting a lot of clap back from some of my teammates. I was wearing a Knicks varsity jacket earlier in the season when they were still in the playoffs. I'll go on the record right now. I think the Knicks are gonna be making a huge push next season. We need to pick up a couple pieces on the way, but you know, I'm looking forward to that.
Love it, Jonah Davis. Thanks for joining us this week.
Yeah, thanks for doing this.
Thank you guys. I really appreciate it.
Well, Kevin, great having Jonah Davis on here this week. And, boy, I'm glad to see this King County lineup starting to come alive. And it's been guys like Davis and Kerrigan leading the way.
Yes, it has. It just knew it was just going to be a matter of time before this lineup broke out and started getting some runs. And you just hope that the pitching was going to still hold up, waiting for the offense to get it together. And it looks like things are clicking really good right now with this King County ball club.
Well, you know, Kevin, I am glad that you had so much optimism about that, because this is the one spot that I was kind of shaking my head about, going, they're going to have great pitching this season, but I'm just not sure after Jimmy Kerrigan what they're going to get. And Jonah Davis right now just screaming the ball, winds up being chosen, as we said here when we had him on the show, as our player of the week this week, with a nice .368 batting average, 3 homers and 10 RBI for him. A guy who really all of a sudden looks like he's getting into that rhythm right now. And man, King County is going to be that offense that could propel themselves into a second or even first place spot here in this division.
You look at the lineup, Josh Allen has, it looks like he's gotten back to his 2019 form. TJ Bennett is starting to hit the ball in the ballpark like we saw all winter in Australia. And Jimmy Kerrigan is showing signs of coming back to life. Cornelius Randolph is as consistent as he's ever been. So, you know, it's been a work in progress, but it's really starting to come together for the Cougars.
Now, I understand that they're not at the top, and we're going to jump into the Kevin Lucco power rankings here in just a moment. But besides this offense, man, talk about just an incredible group of starting pitching right now. I think both of us expected Weston Muir and Jack Fox to come back and continue to shine. Tyler Beardsley has been spectacular for this team right now. It seems like when they have a starter going out there, if you're lucky to get 3 runs against them, you know, you're counting your blessings at that point. What an incredible starting staff this group has been.
And we were wondering when they did not keep Jose Fuentes, we thought, wow, this could be pretty rough, but you know, this rotation hasn't missed a beat. I thought I finally jinxed Muir into a loss because I mentioned that he was undefeated as a pro when I did the blog. And I thought, oh, great, I think I finally jinxed him. He gave up 3 runs in the first inning, but then settled down nicely, gave up 1 run in his last 4 innings and allowed the offense time to get back into the game. And I believe he ended up with a no decision. So the 0 losses for his pro career is still holding up as of now.
So King County entering the week here, 4.5 games out of first place right now, technically in 4th place in the East Division. According to the newly released Kevin Lucco Power Rankings, one of my favorite parts of the season when we get underway with this year, you have King County, I believe, coming in at 9th. Am I right about that at this point, or one off of that?
Yeah. You're not even close. They're not my power rankings. They are the 10th inning stretch power rankings. They are not mine.
Oh, my apologies.
If you read the blog, you would know, because I made note of
which
that.
Which I did. I noticed it.
And I have something I talked to my intern staff about, too, that they are to be the 10th inning stretch power rankings, not my personal power rankings. I have a crack staff that pours over these numbers. There's a lot of midnight oil burned. You know, a lot of pots of coffee drank as we pour over these numbers and try to get things down just perfect. This is just a Kevin production.
I did notice that you slightly chastised me about that. So, they're always affectionately the KLPR to me. So let's continue on. In the number one spot, we see in the 10th inning blog spot, 10th inning stretch blog spot, I should say, power rankings this week.
10th inning stretch power rankings.
Power rankings. Okay, we're rolling with that. 10th inning stretch power rankings. Kansas City Monarchs. Open as the initial number one team in the rankings out there, 22-11. This team has been absolutely spectacular since the calendar turned to June. It was really just that first week that was trouble for them, Kevin, and they've just been outstanding since.
They have, and witnessed by going up to Fargo and sweeping the Redhawks, something that had not been done since the St. Paul Saints did it in before the All-Star break in 2019. So, that's 4 years, according to my McKinley math, and it was pretty impressive the way they did it, too, getting it done in extra innings against a really, really tough Redhawks ball club. But ever since then, they've swooned a bit. Right now, as we're recording this tonight, they're down 8-2 to Chicago and looking to be limping back to Legends Field, losing 3 out of 4 at Impact Field. So, you know, I tell you guys, this is why I don't do the power rankings too early, because stuff like this happens and just shakes everything up. So I would not be surprised if there's a new team in the number one spot next week.
You know, this Kansas City team is another great example, and we have probably in the past 4 or 5 years here, about 10,000 examples at this point. But just another great example of why Joe Calfapietra is recognized as arguably the best manager in Partner League Baseball. You know, I looked at this team coming into the season and thought, okay, there's a lot of question marks in this pitching staff. I don't know what this offense is going to look like. But, boy, they're getting some great performances out of guys like Collins. The pitching staff is looking pretty solid for them right now. It hasn't. But the bullpen is still a little bit of a work in progress, but he figured out a way to get maximum value out of every guy on this team. And this Kansas City team, I feel like Chris Herrmann is obviously the big name that you're going out there, but I feel like at this point, even if they lost one of their key players, he's got them ready to keep going no matter what is thrown at them.
Well, today they did lose a couple of those players to the Mexican League with shoot the names up here as I get through this point streak mumble jumble. I'm telling you, this point streak, it's just made it sometimes just impossible to just find the right stats that you want. I'm sorry, American Association, but geez, can we go to somebody else for this stuff? Because sometimes navigating through this is impossible. But Edwin Diaz is off to Mexico after 18 games with Kansas City. And also, the leadoff batter, pull it up here.
Johannes Way Fargas, is that right? Johannes Way Fargas?
Yes. He won the $10 Seager, who was hitting 347 at the top of that order, and just a real force. But he is also heading to Mexico, so... You know, we always talk about Calfapietra reloading, and that's exactly what he's going to have to do with these guys moving on. And as we know, he's always seems to be a step ahead of the game. He might have two people waiting to join the team when they get back to Kansas City late tomorrow morning.
You're absolutely right. Edwin Diaz, a guy who was an addition to the club a couple weeks into the season and has had some big hits for them in recent weeks. So another great example for Joe. Let's move to the number two spot here, Kevin, as we have the Kansas City Monarchs jumping on the first, and second is the Milwaukee Milkmen right now. Kevin, let me get back to standings here for a second. It's like I lost that when I was jumping around. There we go, somewhere around here. I got to get myself better organized, obviously. 21-12, holding a first-place lead by 4 over the Chicago Dogs and Cleveland Railroaders, 8-2 in their last 10. Milwaukee got off to a fast start, Kevin, struggled a little bit. All of a sudden, they've caught fire here as well.
Pretty impressive going down to Cleveland. I believe they won 4 out of the 6 games down there. So, I mean, that's
correct.
That's saying something.
And you know, Kevin, it has been the way that manager Anthony Barone, another guy that we should pat on the back because he always figures out a way to make things happen here. He's got a pretty solid lineup here. A couple of his pieces like Drew Ward and a couple others have not really produced like we thought right off, but boy, Frankie Barteau has been spectacular in the starting rotation. He came back with Juan Echeverria coming out of the bullpen to take start yesterday. He was spectacular. I'm going to tell you, I think from a looking at pitching staffs, there were very few in this league who pressed a right button like Anthony Barone does.
There isn't, and it's not like, you know, he had the ex-big leaguer, the big lefty with him a couple of years ago. Forget the guy's name. But,
Holmgren?
You know, he was, yeah, Holmberg, I think, wasn't it?
Holmberg, yeah, David Holmberg, yeah. I said Holmgren. David Holmberg, yes.
Yeah, he was a name. He was a former big leaguer, but, you know, it's been a... It's kind of a no-name staff, but you look at the numbers across the board, the job's getting done. And the guy I'm really interested in right now is Gregory Vasquez, who was very good out of the bullpen and getting, like, occasional long outing. And now he's had two starts in a row, 10 and third innings with only 3 hits allowed, no runs. So got to wonder if they – get him stretched out, if he could emerge as an ace in the staff. But boy, 25.1 innings and a 1.06 ERA, that's pretty darn impressive.
A guy that has really turned his career around. I'm just looking at Christian Young last season, 5.09 ERA and 25 appearances, 10 of those starts for the club during the regular season, then just had a spectacular postseason for this team. This year gave up his first run after 25 innings. I'm going to be honest here, Kevin. I did not envision him becoming a guy we'd be talking about as potentially the top pitcher in the American Association this year. But boy, Christian Young has been everything and more that Milwaukee could have imagined.
But, you know, he's always had Anthony Barone's support. If you remember, Christian Young was the guy that in game 4, we had no idea who was going to go for the Milkmen that night against Fargo, and he called upon Young, and Young pitched 5 really good innings and helped them get to a game 5. So, you know, Barone has never wavered in his support of Christian Young, and now we are seeing why this year.
Number 3 in the rankings this week, the Fargo-Moorhead Redhawks, currently in second place in the West Division, 1.5 games behind the Kansas City Monarchs. Had a tough series against Kansas City, as you said. Monarchs go up there and sweep them. Now this team returns home this week, Kevin, for a 6-game homestand. I really don't feel like this team's in any trouble, but, boy, they've had some losses in the pitching staff with injuries and signings, and maybe there is a little bit of a cause for concern with the Redhawks.
I think it'll be a work in progress, but I think we need to revisit them, I think, in, like, around the All-Star break, and let's see where that pitching staff is at that time, because there's going to be a lot of young guys pitching big innings for this club for a while now, and it's a chance for somebody to step up and take on a spot in the rotation. So, you know, the openings are there right now. So it's going to be interesting of all the young arms that have come in, who's going to be the one or two guys that can step in and get the job done right away.
The one guy I'm really kind of curious your thoughts on and how he winds up working after this Redhawks rotation is Garrett Alexander, signed by Cleveland, sent then to Fargo. The right-hander has put up a lot of innings for the Railroaders over the last couple of years, but the stats have not been, you know, necessarily pretty. How do you see him faring with Fargo-Moorhead?
Well, sometimes a change in atmosphere does a player some good, too. And maybe just a different, you know, a different approach, maybe a different pitching coach. Maybe Kevin McGovern can see something in him that he can work on, and you just never know. Sometimes it's all it takes. It's just a little bit of a different pitching philosophy, and the guy just takes off from there. So yeah, if you look at McGovern himself, where we thought he was at the end of his line when he was with Winnipeg in 2020, and he got a new lease on life with the Red Hawks, and he's taken off from there. So I'm guessing the Red Hawks are thinking, well, maybe we can get that same thing out of Garrett Alexander.
One guy, a fan of yours and mine since we've seen him in the American Association, really starting to come back and hit with authority right now is Dylan Thomas. If you're worried about what this offense is going to look like for the Red Hawks, you know, there's been a couple of guys who've been carrying the load so far. Sam Dexter's been beyond what anything we could have expected out of him as well. But Dylan Thomas finally hitting with authority, and I think that's bad news for the rest of this division.
And there's some other guys starting to feel it too. Leo Pena, John Silviano, their averages are creeping up. But if you look at the stats, I think one guy we got to talk about is Evan Alexander on the leadoff spot, leads the team in RBIs with 26. And now you got Pena with 25 runs batted in, Silviano with 25 runs batted in. The average with those guys, it'll get there. But after such a slow start, you wondered if it was when it was going to happen. But we are seeing it, as we saw on Saturday night when I believe it was Thomas, Pena, and Silviano going back-to-back-to-back in Sioux Falls.
First time that's this season that a team has had three players go back-to-back-to-back like that. So the Cleveland Railroaders, Kevin, in fourth place in the rankings this week. They are in third, or tied for second in the East Division at 18-17. Very tough week as Milwaukee came down there and took four of the six games, but they had a little bit of good news that came in a signing this week, and maybe that helps this bullpen.
No doubt about it. When you get Nick Gardwine back as the back end of your bullpen, that helps solve a lot of problems really quick. And sure, it's going to result in a lot of shuffling of the deck chairs as far as who's getting what inning now, but I would say if it's because of Gardwine coming back, that's a pretty good problem to have. So, you know, like you said, great news for the Railroaders. And yes, they did lose 4-6 to Milwaukee, but 1-2 they won was just a real nice ninth inning rally against a great closer with Nate Hadley. I don't know who saw this, but it was weird. It was raining in Cleburne. They even had like a little bit of a delay. And I don't know if Hadley was having trouble with the mound, if he was having trouble gripping the ball, but it was like suddenly he lost his control. And on the last pitch of the game, which was a ball four to, I forget who the batter was, to walk in the winning run, the pitch nearly went over the backstop. It was that wild. And it just, I really hope it was a case of just Hadley not being comfortable out there. Hope it's not a sign that, you know, he's getting any kind of Steve Blast thing or anything. So I know we're supposed to be talking about Cleburne, but it was such a weird occurrence on Saturday. I just felt like we had to bring it up.
Well, if you're a Railroaders fan, a little concerned about this pitching staff, you got to love this bullpen right now, Kevin. But besides Gardewine, as you mentioned there, they signed Michael Long, who looked very good in his couple of appearances for them. They're getting great outings out of Trey Crumbrie and Kyle Kalich. Joe Shaw has been very good for this team. They're getting a very solid bullpen. I feel like at this point, because this bullpen is so deep, they if they can get four innings out of a starter on most nights, they're going to be in games all the time because the bullpen is going to shut opponents down and they're going to be able to be okay.
You have to wonder if at some point maybe does one of those guys in the bullpen get summoned to try to become a starting pitcher. You know, Riley Smith rolled really good last night till like the seventh inning, so his line didn't look as good, but he pitched all right, but in general has not been what they hoped for with a guy that's a former major leaguer, 3-4 now with a 5.7 ERA, and you look at the rest of the starting staff too, it's a lot of ERAs plus over the five-run mark, so you have to wonder maybe at some point, you know, we've seen it in our years of following this league where after a while they decide to give a couple guys in the bullpen a chance to do some starts. So, you know, stay tuned. And like you said, maybe with Kalich, that's going to be an opportunity for him. And let's see what happens with that.
Yeah, unfortunately, Kevin Hilton back on the disabled list for them too. So,
we
talked about King County. Then, yeah, I know it was. Yeah, he's having a tough start to the beginning of the year for sure. Kane County in the number five spot, as we already talked about. That brings us to number six in the Lincoln Salt Dogs. 6.5 games out in the West Division. A team that really was trying to figure out how to get things together, Kevin. And just now just figuring out, winning 2 out of 3 in most of their series, winning a lot of one-run games, winning a lot of late games. This is, I think, a team that other teams come playoff time are not going to want to face.
It's been very interesting. You know, me being a St. Paul Saints fan, I always associated Haymarket Park as being a Chamber of Horrors. It seemed like when St. Paul went down there, other than playoff games, they just found a way to lose every night and usually in stunning fashion. And it seems like the Salt Dogs have found that winning mojo at home. And we've seen a lot of late inning wins from that ball club where, you know, we could see this might be a springboard for some good things coming up for the Salt Dogs.
Now, you ripped me about the Kevin Hilton thing. I do want to say Drew Devine was a guy that I thought this season was going to be have a breakout year in Lincoln. He's been great at that shortstop position, hitting over 300. Nate Sampson catching fire recently.
I will give you that.
Nate Sampson catching fire right now, Kevin. He's looking pretty good out of this group here. And I think if you look at this Lincoln team, Will Kencher's still not hitting yet. Aaron Takas not hitting yet. There's some pieces of this club that haven't produced yet, but you know those guys are going to hit. So, I mean, if you're looking at this, you got to feel pretty good about Lincoln and their position. This could easily be this should be at least the third place team in this division.
Look at it, like a Luke Roskam, Matt Goodhart, those guys too have not produced like they had hoped. So, if you get the guys playing up to the resumes, you're right. It could be a pretty potent offense.
Number 7 in the rankings, Kevin, the Chicago Dogs finally ended that terrible losing streak. They find themselves tied for second place in the East Division, 4 games behind Milwaukee, 17-16. Man, that was an incredibly tough stretch. But Nick Green comes up with pitcher of the week by us this week after tossing 7 shutout innings. His team almost blew that game for him up 7-0, but Green with a spectacular performance for the club.
Yeah, that's big. This team needed to get that losing streak broke and get back on a good swing again, just like we saw last year when they believe they lost 9 or 10 in a row in August, and then it was like as soon as they got that losing streak broke, they took off, and I think we're seeing that out of Chicago right now, and that's the reason why, even through this whole mess, they're still sitting in, was it second or third place, I believe?
Tied for second right now in the division, yes. You know, Kevin, this is a team, like when we were watching that losing streak last season, we were scratching our head about that going, well, this is a team that was built to not have the long losing streak. It wasn't a guy, you know, you weren't having 3 incredible hitters, both all hitting above 300 with 18 homers or something, and then a bunch of other guys. You had a very solid group that everybody was hitting 260 or more. You had a pretty good pitching staff, a very solid bullpen. You just thought that was a team built for to avoid the losing streak. And you look at this team right now, fourth in batting that they have right now. The home run numbers have been down. See, about middle of the pack group right there. Sixth in pitching, ERA there. I saw that 10-game losing streak, and I thought, man, how is this team losing games? It just doesn't seem to make sense with this dog club, but they find a way to get into these prolonged slumps.
It was just strange because it just seemed like the whole team, for the most part, just went into a swoon, and it's been a real head-scratcher because there's just so much talent on that ball club. I mean, let's face it, earlier this year, they were the darlings of the league after the first couple of weeks. So it was puzzling. You know, a lot of the pitchers that we were touting all seemed to hit a wall, and some of them still have not had their ERAs recover from getting hit around. So got to mention, though, Jake Dalber gets signed, I believe, to Taiwan, so he was struggling, but yeah, you know, he was a veteran arm in that rotation. But just as easy as this team lost 10 in a row, you know, I could see it winning 10 out of 12 or 9 out of 10. So, and you know, they're off to a good start with it. With looks like they'll be winning 3 out of 4 against the Kansas City Monarchs.
And a club that did win 12 out of 14 earlier this season. So it may going to be kind of a bipolar club, I think, is going to be looking at these dogs here this year.
Yeah, you know,
speaking of darling,
reason, it's going to be a very interesting series in Kane County with Cougars and the Dogs. So I'm going to be very curious to see who comes out of that.
Back to darlings here for us, Kevin. Lake Country Dockhounds have really responded well under manager Ken Huckabee. Currently ranked 8th in the rankings this season, tied for 5th in the East Division, 7 games behind Milwaukee, but 2.5 behind Kane County, and that's really what you're tracing more than anything at this particular point. Lake Country, Marcus Chu has looked good for this team. They're getting outstanding pitching. Nick Harold looked great in his start this week. This is a team that I think is a legitimate playoff contender.
I think it'll be a nice test this week for this team to have 6 in a row against the Cleburne Railroaders. I think that's going to be a nice barometer as to really where this Lake Country team is in the East Division hierarchy. But, you know, you look at the bats, and, you know, it's a lot of guys we don't usually talk about, but, boy, up and down, 345, 315, 310, 299, 298, 290. So, you know, the bats are there, and like you said, the pitching has been pretty decent for this club. I'm just really surprised by a guy like Nick Harrell that came out of a Division II school in Winona State, how well he's performed for this club.
Yeah, you got to wonder how long his time will be here. I mean, here's a young kid just lighting it up since he joined the professional ranks. He's just been absolutely spectacular. And you heard Ken Huckabee saying, I don't really get why this guy's here too. Got to believe he's pulling his strings with the Blue Jays organization at the very least and saying, here's a guy that deserves a legitimate shot. And man, Connor Fisk, who struggled early on, Kevin, battling back from some arm injuries he had at affiliate ball the last couple of years, has looked very good for this team of late. Tyler Pike, I think we're kind of waiting to get into a little bit of a groove here too. He's been solid, but I think we're going to see bigger numbers out of him. And I think that this could be a very deep starting rotation if Harold is able to stay here. And that's really, other than Milwaukee, I really feel like there's not other than Kane County, I don't really feel like there's a very deep group in this division right now. Maybe Lake Country is that second team with a solid 5, a solid 4 at least.
It's kind of interesting when you look at when you pour over the stats. So you have 3 guys right now with 1 save. So with, let's see, out of their 14 wins this year, nobody has more than 1 save. So they really haven't seemed to even have an established closer yet. So it's still some incompletes here. But like I said, I just think with Cleburne coming in, that's just going to be a really good barometer as to how far this Lake Country team has come.
Number 10 in the rankings, Gary Stallstrom, Railcats, tied for fifth in the East Division, seven behind Milwaukee, and as I pointed out with Lake Country, 2.5 behind Kane County for fourth place in this division. Gary, after a very solid start to the season, Kevin, just not putting it all together right now. It seems like they're getting good pitching, and then they don't get any hitting to go along with it. And when they get good hitting, they're not getting any pitching to go along, which is really unfortunate because Gio Diaz, LG Castillo, and Jesus Mariaga have been spectacular for this team. And unfortunately, their performances are being a little wasted right now, it looks like.
Yeah, in the last week, they're batting only .244 as a team, and they're just, nobody has become a – we saw last year with Sam Abbott being a surprise power threat, and as of now, I'm not seeing anybody stepping up as far as being a guy that's going to even approach Abbott's power numbers. So, and like you said, there's Mariaga, Castillo are consistent. Diaz has been very good for them on the leadoff spot. You know, that's a guy I think I mentioned in the blog, a second baseman. Batting .333 for this club, and has 22 stolen bases, so he's been a very good table setter, and just someone that I don't think gets talked about enough.
Absolutely. Last week we talked about Marcus Chu and his performance so far. And you're right. We're not talking about Gio Diaz. You know, a guy who moved into the leadoff spot is Michael Woodworth had left when his wife had a baby and didn't get that spot back. He struggled a little bit since returning, and Diaz has picked up the slack right there. 22 stolen bases, Kevin. We're a third of the way through the season. And I think the league record is like 42. That record's fallen this year. There's no doubt about that.
Oh, I think so. If he manages to keep getting on base like he's been, no doubt that record is. I don't think that record's going to stand a chance. Just don't pull a hammy.
16 walks. Yeah, exactly. 16 walks, 8 hit by pitches, 38 hits for the guy. I mean, he's doing the job of figuring out a way to get on base every night there. And what's even more impressive about those 22 stolen bases, Kevin, one time he's been thrown out. And that's a guy getting the job done for you at the leadoff spot for sure. Well, that drops us to number 11, Kevin, the Winnipeg Goldeyes, who had a bit of a good stretch a couple weeks ago, now struggling, currently tied for fifth in the West Division at 13-20. 9 games behind Kansas City. They were a game and a half behind Sioux City. Did I pass Sioux City? How did I get to that, Kevin? Did I miss Sioux City around here? So I did. I feel badly now. Number 9, I missed Sioux City. So let's talk about them, Kevin. I apologize about that. Sioux City in 9th place. How did I miss that? They are 15-19, 7.5 behind Kansas City in the standings. They had a tough week, lost some very close contests out there, and looking at them, I just don't know who Steve Montgomery depends on in their bullpen to shut the opponents down right now.
You know, Ken Hassler has been very good, and Rakowski has been decent as a closer, but bridging the gap to them has been a little tough. I don't think Nate Gerken's been his usual self this year, so that's been a tough go with the Redhawks as far as being able to keep leads.
And you talked about last week the impact of the qualifying, I believe, Pan Am games. That's where everybody's at right now. This team lost a couple of huge pieces, especially Matt Lloyd. He was lighting up the league, and now you're trying to figure out a way to keep yourself above water. Fortunately, I just think Winnipeg right now and Sioux Falls are kind of helping them out a little bit to keeping them more competitive so that, you know, they can withstand the stretch of these guys being gone and still hold on to fourth or third.
You know, it's going to be very interesting to see how this lineup looks when Matt Lloyd and Jake Sanford do get back, because since they've been gone, Tyler Randall is back and he's hitting .326. And I thought John Nogalski, I thought that was a tremendous signing. And I think once he gets his timing down, we're going to see Nogalski terrorizing this league too. So, you know, I think there could be, as far as the batters for the Sioux City Explorers goes, I think there could be better days ahead.
We should mention yesterday that quite the moment when Steve Montgomery was thrown out of a game against Lincoln, walked away with third base. I told him, I said, that was, I was appreciative he got me my birthday present already this year, Kevin.
And he even got a fan to sign it for you.
Okay, now we can talk about the Winnipeg Knights at this point. Fifth place in the West Division, 1.5 games behind Sioux City, a team that had a great stretch at home, then went out on the road and struggled, then came home and had to face, I believe it was Kansas City, and kind of took it on the chin then, and just have not been able to get up right now.
This team is just struggling to put up runs right now. Max Murphy has struggled, even though he does lead the team with 8 homers and 26 RBIs after that. Jake Bockley has got 5 homers, 24 RBIs, and then it just drops off the table from there. Do have to mention that that Dayson Cruz finally, I believe their hitting streak was at 25, 26 games. So that
25, yeah.
25. That was broken up in a 19-0 loss to the Sioux Falls Canaries on Wednesday night. But boy, looking at the last two games, he's bouncing back already. 6-4 his last 11, so 3.79 for the year. So I say Dayson Cruz has been the offensive highlight so far this season for the Gold Eyes.
You know, you were talking about Alexander leading Fargo in RBI at the leadoff spot. Cruz with 25 RBI and 24 runs scored in that top spot for this group. I mean, this guy is the real deal. I don't know how he got away from affiliate ball, but boy, he has sure been quite a find for manager Greg Taggart. It's unfortunate though, because behind him, you know, Chris Burgess is he's been okay, and I mean, they're getting a better performance out of Hideko Gonzalez this season and offensively, but you're just really not seeing the solid offense right now. And unfortunately, this pitching staff isn't good enough to carry this team. This Winnipeg team, is in a little bit of trouble right now, Kevin.
I think they are, and I don't really know what Greg Taggart can do at this point. You know, I don't know if I made the point in the blog or not, but in talking to people, Taggart's thing has always been going out and finding these overlooked, undrafted free agents. The problem is, one, a lot of the other teams are figuring out that that's been a pretty good route to go as far as getting a good rookie base in your ball club. So that's not a great Taggart original anymore. And plus, you got these other partner leagues where it is all undrafted players trying to get noticed. So the pool's just not there anymore. And I thought we saw Taggart kind of go to a lot of guys that he knew and trusted from the past. And frankly, it's just not happening to him. I just don't know where does he turn to for reinforcements.
Yeah, I think that's a very good question. With the Pioneer League being out there and them choosing just countless numbers of young guys, and they've expanded this year too, Kevin. I think it was just 6 or 8 teams last year. I believe it's at 12 right now. So you have another group of 100 players or more that are instantly off the market. And I'm going to tell you something too, is that shows a total hats off to Jim Bennett and finding a guy like Nick Harold last year, that he was able to come up with a guy like that. I just feel like right now that's going to be few and far between when a manager is coming up with a complete gem from Division II or Division III who can wind up coming in and going, you know, 8-3 for you with a 2.5 ERA. That's going to be an almost improbability. And so I'm not really sure Winnipeg goes. And unfortunately, Kevin, they made the playoffs last season, kind of snuck in at the end. This is a team that's had a very dry stretch lately, and Winnipeg fans have been coming out more. Their attendance has really been raising over the last couple weeks, but, I think they're going to be greatly disappointed by the time the season comes to an end.
The standard has been raised ridiculously high by Rick Forney and then before him, Hal Lanier, where Winnipeg fans, year in, year out, they don't just expect a winning club. They don't expect to just be entertained. They expect championships, and if it's not happening, they're not going to idly sit by and just be amused. So it'll be interesting to see if the fans kind of turn on the team if their fate doesn't turn around soon.
Well, let's close out the power rankings with the Sioux Falls Canaries. Mike Hart today chosen by the league as the top player for the player of the week, had a .474 batting average, walked 6 times, also had 3 homers, drove in 8. Very fine week for Hart. .500 on base percentage this season, Kevin. This a guy we have watched mature, if you want to put it that way, grow here in the American Association, hitting .360 this season. Has become one of those guys you've been rooting for. He's had some highlight films and catches on SportsCenter and things like that. Now really developing his bat. Maybe he gets a legitimate shot to be playing affiliate ball here sometime soon.
He could. And I think having a big year for Schomburg last year may have done some good for his confidence too. And that's helped him become an even more complete player. And I think too, on this ball club that's just so young, you just see a guy like a Mike Hart, he's not just become just a really good hitter, I think he's become a leader on this team.
A guy you talked about in the power rankings, Kevin, I think right now you could talk about one of the top 3 MVP candidates right now. Darnell Sweeney off to an incredible start for this team. I believe had 4 straight games with home runs a couple weeks ago, .346 batting average right now. Sweeney was great in Kansas City. He's been even better here in Sioux Falls.
No doubt. It's been fun to watch him prosper with the Canaries. And I just think he's the kind of guy where, you know, it's contagious with him. The way he plays, it rubs off on a lot of these other guys too. And you look at their top 6 guys in the, as far as batting average goals, it's a pretty good lineup when you look at it with, Jordan Barth with 25 RBIs. Wellington Dotel, when he's been healthy, he's been productive. 3 homers, 23 RBIs. Ozzy Martinez has been good when he's been healthy and around. And Wyatt Ulrich is getting it going again back up to .281. So I just think when you got a guy like Sweeney around, guys just kind of feed off of what he's doing, and it's just makes for a really solid batting order for the Canaries.
You know, Kevin, what surprises me about this team right now is that they have some guys with, especially in the starting rotation, with very credible numbers in ERA, especially pitching in Sioux Falls. I think everybody'd agree that that's a nightmare if you're a pitcher. But Ty Gulbrith has really been hammered this year. I mean, no offense to him, but good Lord, he's taking it on the chin for this team. And TJ Schiraby has not looked particularly great for them. Colby Wyatt has struggled for them, especially when he's been cast in the starting rotation. I thought this rotation has been better. You know, you're getting Keem Bostic has, you know, battled a little bit of injuries, but has pitched pretty well for them. And Harden has pitched well for them. I'm a little surprised that this team is not better than they are. Is that a mirage to me? I'm missing something?
Well, I think at the back end of the game, too, it's been another spot in which the Canaries have struggled. Walters has pitched very well in his starts. Neil Lang, after a slow start, he's getting it together, and I'm gradually seeing his ERA heading down to a more respectable level. Don't know what's going on with Colbreth. Every start, I keep thinking, okay, this is going to be the one where he gets going, and it just has not happened yet. But it just seems like the from the starting rotation to the back end of the pen, it's just been a mystery right now. And, you know, Mike Myers gone out. He's made moves. He's brought in the younger arms, and I think right now it's just open auditions to see who wants to be a reliable reliever for him.
Well, Kevin, before we're going around the rest of the partner leagues, let's talk a little bit about stuff going on around the American Association more fully. You talked about Nate Hadley had a very tough outing a couple nights ago against Cleburne, and I was kind of thinking, and I'm actually going to write this as an article later this week to look more thoroughly in this. I feel like there are very few teams in this league right now that can depend on their closer to finish off games right now. I don't remember a season we've seen in the past where there were eight or nine that really weren't getting a, hey, this is going to be a sure out. We're going to close out the game. Our guy went out here and this game is over. I feel like two or three teams can say that at tops right now. And it's an interesting dynamic to the season, I think.
It is. And right now, you know, the guys that are closing games very possibly may not be the ones closing come September. So, you know, if the struggles continue with the guys that they're trotting out now, you know, if you find a guy that's been getting the job done in the seventh or eighth inning, it's, you know, as we saw with hockey, it comes to a point where you got to try the other guy and give him an opportunity. So that'll be interesting to see how that emerges throughout the year. I know, and like a prime example of that has been Fargo-Moorhead, where Reid Burlingmeier was pretty much a sure thing when he was with the ball club, and you thought when Alex DuBord came back that DuBord would be right in that closer spot, but that has not happened yet. Tanner Riley's been okay, but he hit a bump in the road too against Kansas City Monarchs. Granted, a lot of guys have lately, but yeah, I think you hit on a good point. It'd be interesting to see the article too, because, like, you know, there are no real surefire guys out there at this point.
Attendance. Chicago had over 6,000 people yesterday, Kevin. I loved to have seen that. That was a fantastic stat to be looking at. King County had over 5,000 yesterday as well, 5,400. They lead the league in attendance at 5,354 per game. Chicago at 4,282 is next. You have a couple of teams over 3,000, and Fargo just short of that number right now. So you have six teams that are getting pretty good attendance. But, boy, after that, it's disappointing. You and I talk continuously as seasons go along. Fans don't get to hear this very often, but man, we're concerned with this. The league looks healthy, but boy, this attendance has got to get better. You got to feel.
I don't know nowadays what the break even point is. It used to be, back in the day, you know, Bill Tyler and I would talk about attendance quite a bit. And he always told me that if you're drawing 3,000 a game or better, you're going to be all right. I don't know, and I know the people that do know are probably going to have a good hearty chuckle about this, but does the money coming in from league sponsorships, does the money coming in from American Association Baseball TV, does that do enough to offset the lack of attendance? Is the bar now lower for what teams need to be bringing in at the gate to break even? Is there enough newer ballparks now with amenities where you don't have to draw 3,000 a night, but if you're filling all your luxury areas, you're going to be all right? So, but you're right. It is alarming when you see half the league are not drawing 2,000 fans a night. And boy, back in the day, if a team wasn't drawing 2,000 a night, the red lights would be on. And now it's half the league, including some larger markets. Let's call it out right there. You know, Kansas City's in a major media market. Milwaukee, mid-sized to pretty big. You wouldn't think in those areas where there's a major league club, but there's not a lot going on for minor league baseball. I don't know how either one of those teams are not pulling in at least 2,000 a game.
Those two teams in particular, Kevin, the hottest two teams in the league right now.
And Lake Country, same excuse for Lake Country. You know, you're right near Milwaukee also.
And a new ballpark. You know, you got the shiny new object. And this kind of stuns me. So half of the teams, as you mentioned, at 2,800 or more per game. But the drop-off from Gary at 6, 2802, to Lake Country at 7, 1625, a 1,200 fan per game difference between the top, the sixth place team and the seventh. That's a big number. I mean, that seems like overwhelming. I mean, it's one thing, you know, when St. Paul was in the league and they were drawing 9,000 a game or whatever ridiculous number that they were at, the second place team was at 4,000. Okay, you get that. And King County is a team that's drawn 6,000-7,000. As we get more into the summer, they'll have huge attendance numbers, and they'll be way above 7,000. They'll be leading easily. I get it. Ballpark fan appreciation and involvement is fantastic. Totally get that. Okay, but when you're looking at those other teams starting to move down the rankings, you got to wonder what that's about, you know?
Keep in mind, though, for the same reasons you're talking about Kane County being up around 6,000-7,000 for an average, you hope that that will also prove true in the bottom six teams, that once school's out, once the weather's nicer on a consistent basis, that you hope that the teams do their marketing right to get fans out to the ballpark, and they take advantage of the nicer weather in the summer to get their numbers up, too. And let's see, let's revisit this in the middle of August and see where we're at.
My apologies to fans out there. The smoke alarm going off there in the kitchen. My house isn't on fire, so we're okay. So we're okay out there. Oh, we're going to go off again. Hold on a minute. Kevin, you have to talk for a minute.
I'm just thinking of the Seinfeld episode when the smoke alarm went off and George was shoving everybody away to try to get out of the house first, including the kid's birthday party. And I can always remember the Jerry Seinfeld line when he's talking with George about it. And he says, "George, basically what you're telling me, when there's a fire, is every man, woman, child, and invalid for themselves."
I want to say, but for the record, I did not push my grandkids out of the way. I want to say that, Kevin. Kevin, one thing I want to bring up with you here that you talked about early on in the season two was when we were going to start to see a division, a break where we knew here's your top echelon of a division or your top echelon in the league, and then here's the guys that are going to be battling for those final couple spots, maybe even for the final one spot in the division. Clearly out on the West, it looks like we're getting that right now with Kansas City and Fargo at the top and the other four teams in that division battling to see who's going to grab those last two spots.
We have, and, you know, that's a neat thing with the four teams making the playoffs, too, is that hope springs eternal, and after a while you chop that division in half, and then you start shooting for the third spot. You know, right now Sioux Falls and Winnipeg are tied for last place, but they're only a game and a half out of a playoff spot. So after a while, you make your goals a little bit smaller. You just realize after a while, hey, maybe we're not going to catch the first two teams, but, you know, if we're playing for that chip in a chair come September, and that becomes the goal.
Well, let's jump into the other partner leagues at this time. Out of the Atlantic League, it is the York Revolution leading the North Division at 27-18. They are currently 1.5 games ahead of the Southern Maryland Blue Crabs. In the South Division, the Gastonia Honey Hunters are at 32-13. They hold a game and a half division lead over the High Point Rockers. This division is going to be a battle between two teams. It's the next team in that division, 11 out. That's the Lexington Counterclocks, which I still think is a pretty crazy name. We jump to the Frontier League, Kevin, where the Sussex County Miners are leading over the New Jersey Jackals by a game in the East Division. In the West, the Gateway Grizzlies leading the Schaumburg Boomers by a game, or excuse me, tied with them at both at 20-12 with a half-game lead over the Evansville Otters, who are in third place in the division. Today, they named their player and pitcher of the week. It is Aaron Alther, I believe is what that says, is the player of the week for the Tri-City Valley Cats. He hits .444 with three homers and eight RBI. And Cole Cook tossed a nine-inning complete game shutout to earn the Pitcher of the Week for the Joliet Slammers. And if my smoke detector will not go off here at my daughter's house anymore, I think we're going to get to the final thought, Kevin.
Well, my final thought is right now the only place that's having more issues with smoke in your house is the East Coast right now with fires rolling in from Canada that are playing havoc on trying to get some ball games, with some games being postponed because of the smoke. I mean, it's been really, really strange to see. You know, you see the pictures of the sky, and the sky is like orange. And even up here in Minnesota, we had a couple of nights last week where we were traveling, and if you're just outside, it just smelled like, you know, smelled like wood burning. And you hope that it's just an isolated issue, and it's not something we're going to have to be dealing with the entire summer. You know, we just got some rain up here a little while ago, so maybe that washes some of it out of the air, but you just hope that it just doesn't become like a whole summer of that we're dealing with poor air quality as we try to play baseball games.
I'm loving that final thought, and hopefully that will be the case. I do want to mention, if you want to learn more about Kevin's, the 10th inning stretch power rankings, please go out to 10thinningstretch.blogspot.com to see a full evaluation by Kevin and the interns on how he came up with his list of 1 through 12. Because we know, Kevin, these are not just American Association power rankings. They are the preeminent and completely authoritative rankings.
Preeminent and widely recognized leader in American Association power rankings.
For, I believe, 7 years now? Are we on? Or are we on six?
I think six is like, do my little math here. Yeah, 23, because I believe I went back and looked, and it did start in 2018. So,
yeah.
Six seasons. And if you were, anyone listening, if you've ever been an intern, please come out and read my blog on 10thinningstretch.blogspot.com, because I think I hit on everything in a real fun way about being an intern. So, you know, as I'm writing this on my patio while watching ball games on my computer, I'm telling my wife about this, and she goes, "So, people are going to think you're serious." Like, no.
They've been listening to the show for years.
Yeah, I think anyone that reads it knows my writing, and they know that it's all in some pretty good fun.
Well, Kevin, before ending tonight, I want to add one additional final thought for us here tonight, because I know this is something near and dear to our hearts. Our good buddy Dan Vaughn reached his 900th career game as a broadcaster, and Kevin and I want to say congratulations to Dan. A big moment for him. We know that next year he'll be crossing 1,000, no doubt in our minds somewhere out there. But a true professional, an even greater human being, and a guy we've come to love.
Indeed. You know, I quote George Samus. I forget who he's talking about, but if someone has a problem with someone like Dan Vaughn, they're the one with the problem, because Dan Vaughn has just been a great atmosphere. He's atmosphere now. He's been a great ambassador for the American Association, and three teams, 900 games. I mean, the guy just loves the sport. He loves what he does. And, you know, even more important, he loves the people that he works with and has gotten to know throughout the years, and he's helped this league become a tight-knit family. And I was not in Lincoln for game 900 because I'm thinking on the same wavelength that you are. I'm thinking, well, I'm going to wait and make sure I'm wherever he's going to be at for game 1,000 next year. So I was there in spirit on Saturday night, but I will definitely be there in body for game 1000 next year.
And if we continue on with the way the schedule will be, then it should be sometime around June 17, 18, 19, sometime next year. So fans, keep an eye out for that, because I think that'd be a great time for us to broadcast live that week from Dan Vaughn 1000 games. So we love it.
Well, he is a former Cole.
Once again, Kevin. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Once again, Kevin and I want to thank Jonah Davis for joining us this week. For Kevin Lucco, I am Rob Panier. We'll see you next time on This Week in the Association.